Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And I'm very excited today to have an incredible guest. We've been talking the last couple of weeks, because school's about to begin, about education, about crystal indigos and rainbow children. And we've talked about what's available for the parents to help with these incredible kids. And so it's my great pleasure to welcome John Thompson, who is the publisher of Illumination Arts. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Atira.
Yeah. And I have been reviewing your books, I guess, for about 2 years, and was thrilled when I found them. And I want to know, what made you, were you originally in publishing, or did you just decide one day to go into publishing?
Well, it was a stroke of insanity, roughly 16 or 17 years ago.
John, I'm going to ask you to speak up a little.
I said it was a stroke of insanity, roughly 17 years ago, that made me decide to start publishing books.
What did you do before you became a publisher?
Beg pardon?
What did you do before you became a publisher?
Well, I was trained as a certified public accountant, so I had in Bellevue, Washington, an accounting practice specializing in income taxation.
That's a pretty serious leap from doing book work and taxes to publishing.
Well, as I phased out of accounting, I was starting to do various investment management things, and also had a feeling I was going to get somehow involved in media. And at that point, I thought I was going to get somehow involved in movies, but not as an actor, but as a producer. But after being pulled to India in 1976, on the first of 17 trips to India, it all morphed into spiritual publishing.
That's amazing. So the first trip to India took you in a totally different direction.
Completely.
You know, really, when we get those cosmic wake-up calls, if we're smart, we answer.
I wasn't even that smart, and I still kind of answered.
Well, I think you did a good job.
Yeah, I stumbled there. I spent 4 days. And
were you drawn? Was it a spiritual quest that you went to India?
Well, what happened was I was doing some investment things where I was raising a large amount of money for a project through a Swiss lender, and I was heading there, and I had been advised by this fellow earlier to buy a book on Sai Baba called The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist. So I had resisted reading it because I first didn't like his hairdo, and then I didn't like the title of the book. And finally, as I was packing up in the wee hours before going on this trip to Switzerland, it was the only thing I could lay my hands on to read on the trip. And I was so taken with the book that I went on with my wife on to India.
Wow. So did you actually get to meet Sai Baba?
Oh, in those days it was pretty easy, although I was completely like one, but they have what's called darshans, where he walks among the people, and these days it's like small crowds of 10,000. In those days it was not too many hundreds, and one day I had my group of comic books, and I was reading away, and, you know, before he came, and at one point the fellow with white clothes came and poked me in the shoulder and said, "Sir, while you were reading comics, Sai Baba came and left."
Oh, so, my God.
So I was
missed
there.
Missed opportunity.
I was there.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
That's an incredible story. It is terrible when we miss that moment.
Well, there have been a few. But
there's certainly
a
lesson.
I've been back for 17 trips there, seeing, including Amici, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, Karuna Mai. So I've had some blessings there, many blessings, really.
So, really, this all became a spiritual path. In that sense of really the Indian path from India, the yogis and things. And
well, yeah,
you came back and decided to publish children's books.
Well, we first started out doing two metaphysical adult books. One is Peace at Last, The After-Death Experience of John Lennon. Previously we had published by the same author, who was a channeler from Southern Oregon, Jason Lean, The Death of the Prophet, which is the completion of Cahil Gibran's Prophet Trilogy.
Wow.
And we were then presented with this book by some friends, where a lady named Shara Curtis had received a poem titled All I See Is Part of Me, and her friend Cynthia Aldrich had gotten well into drawings for this book, and they presented it to us, and it was such an amazing piece of work. We said, let's try a children's book, and we ended up deciding to focus solely on children's books.
Well, am I ever glad you did. I have to tell you, I have read several of your children's books. And one thing that strikes me, it's not just the stories. They're wonderful, too. But the artwork in these are so dramatic. They take your breath away. It's like seeing, one of the great works of art in the world in a whole book. How do you find your artists? They're so fabulous.
We have world-class artists. And what do you see are, well, both the fall book, Just Imagine, is an amazing creation by an artist from the East Coast. His name is Woden. And every scene is basically God's hands forming the protection for the children during their activities.
I want to remember to say your website because I want people to be able to find it. So if you'll tell them their website.
Great. It's www.illumin.com.
One of the books that I actually, that really struck me is I'm a Color Too. Would you like to talk about that for a minute?
Am I a Color Too?
See, I'm dyslexic. I'll read it back. I love this book so much. It is so striking. It is so, makes children feel so safe because, it's a very confusing world out there for adults, much less children. So I'd love for you to share with my listening audience a little bit about this book.
Sure. Well, the story comes from a little boy who is now 11, whose name is Tyler, and he is living in L.A., and when he was 3, he asked his grandmother, Nancy Vogel, whose book Chicken Soup for the Single Parent Soul came out last year, said, Grandma, am I color too? Because he'd heard his dad call black and someone else was white and so on. And her she and her daughter then thought quite a bit about how do they answer that. And so that was how this story developed. Her daughter's Heidi Cole. And Gerald Purnell is one of the most brilliant artists in America and the world, as far as I'm concerned. He's the illustrator.
I know. When you open the cover page of this book on the inside, it has squares and it has different people's faces. And he is such a great character artist. I mean, the character in these faces, it's almost like they're going to talk to you. It's so breathtaking. I just can't say enough about it. So hard to describe on radio, but such an amazing book. Just the way he captures features and
smiles. I could give you a little
smiles.
Bit of a flavor of the, if they would like to hear a little of the words.
Please share a little
and
bit.
And also, I'll alert you that Gerald is right now working on what he says is going to be the most beautiful book he's ever done. Called God's Promise, and the author's Maureen Moss.
He's going to have to go really further than this, I tell you, because this is pretty great.
Gerald says that the new art will make this art pale in comparison.
Oh, my God.
Story goes, people call my dad black like the dark night sky. They say my mom is white like the clouds way up high. My dad and mom are different, yet very much the same. They have smiles in their faces and share the same last name. Part of each of them is deep inside of me, in my heart and my soul, in ways I've learned to see. My dad, my mom, and me, black, white, and am I color too? I think I'm just a person just like you. When I'm in a busy crowd, I see people from many places, a brightly colored rainbow of many different faces. I see brown, I see cream, I see black, I see white. I see eyes, I see smiles, I see dark, I see light. I'd like to find a word that fits me like a shoe. That's why I sometimes wonder, am I a color too? When I think of all the people, all those faces in my sight, if people are really colors, it must be more than black or white. Anyway, that's just about half of that book. But
that is so magnificent.
It's a treasure.
It is a treasure because it really helps the children find out that we're all the same yet different, and I just it really is a new age book. I love it. It is really taking away the black and white and the confusion. Wonderful.
The ending of that book, the next last page is I am a human being, not a color, not a word. I have my hopes and dreams and a voice that will be heard. That's a send off for every child.
And those are the kids that will change the world.
Well, to me, it's not like we have just a few, these rare rainbow and indigo and crystal children. so many of the children that are coming through now are coming through to change the world. It's like, I think most of them.
I'd agree with that. And I think these kinds of books, though, help them have tools because, you know, really, it's sad in a way, but the school system is very antiquated, and I think it's just so trying to catch up. It's, since the computer age has hit, you know, it's just got it overwhelming. And one of the things I think is really interesting to ask, because there are so many forms of electronic medium available for kids now. So how do you think, how secure do you think the future of books are?
Well, consider this, though, how tactile the experience of holding a child in the lap, which the, for me, just the energy that passes in the physical holding is half the experience, rather than the child there with his little mouse moving it forward by himself. And then the voice, too. So much comes through the voice. And like the, you know, they ask him a question. Like, I think part of what we're doing, or most of what we're doing, I really think, is getting through to the parents and the teachers.
I agree with that. And I do agree that because now so many parents are both working, you know, the amount of time people have available with their children is unfortunately very diminished from when I was a kid. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, so she really, you know, I had a lot of lap time, so it was a good thing. And I think that kids really need that. You know, they need that bonding time, but I think parents do too. I think
totally.
We need human touch. And I think kids have really got on sensory overload with all the computers and the Game Boys and iPods. I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, cell phones. I mean, five-year-olds have cell phones now. It blows my mind. So, to me, I mean, I'm a book person. I mean, the thought of everything going to electronics and being on the computer, to me, is like a frightening thought.
It's not healthy.
No, because I love the smell and the feel and the texture of books. And for me, I love one that someone else has already read and marked the pages. I'm one of those. I like other people's notes in the edges and the margins because I get experience from the experience they've already had. So I think, too, that I'm seeing with these kinds of books, because they're so full of color and just the artwork is so dramatic, it draws you in. I think kids are very... get more sight, sense of color, sense of extraordinariness that they can, you know, color and do themselves. So it encourages art as well.
Reach beyond the norm.
Absolutely.
That's for the book we did in the spring. Well, for Illumination Arts, our whole focus is beautiful, outstanding artwork and then a totally inspiring message. But there's a Seattle artist named Robert Rogalski. And it's his first book, and the author is Emma Roberts. Well, Robert put so many amazing little creatures throughout his artwork and the expressions that he captured. And these amazing little fellows is so captivating that we're just getting a huge response in addition to how great the story is.
That's wonderful. So how do you find your artists, and how do you find your authors?
Well, for the artists, we're probably getting two or three art submissions a day.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And since we have several hundred on file already and are only doing one or two or three books a year these days, finding the artist is not really the huge problem. Like when we have a project, what we do is look over the style of the project and go through all of the ones in our archives and pick maybe 10 or 15 whose style best matches that, and then narrow that down to which ones we prefer, and narrow that down to whose schedule's available, and that's how they get picked.
I hope you get much more successful so it's more than two or three books a year.
Hold
because
that
they're
thought,
so
dear.
Fabulous.
Well,
they
one thing
are.
We've done is set up a foundation called Inspire Every Child Foundation to help get these books in the hands of children all around the world who are in need of inspiration.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Since your books are a spiritual, metaphysical category, I would call them, all of them that I've seen are.
Let's call them inspiring.
Yeah, are teachers able to use them in school? They're really kind of non-denominational.
Most of them are, except for All I See is Part of Me. That's one that's hard to get into schools, even though it's been our most successful book over the years. Mm-hmm. All the others really get well into schools. I have my best shows that I do. I do about 23 shows a year. My best shows are teacher shows.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Like one
so
spiral.
All the teachers listening out there, make sure you check out this website.
www.illumin.com.
Yeah.
Like we have a nice special we're going to be talking about during the... Well, I might as well mention it now.
Mention it now.
Who are listening to this, we're offering to call in to 888-210-8216 and or just send an email, as you can find on the web. We're giving any three of our books for the price of two, and then for the three books, the shipping will only be $1 per book.
That's fabulous offer. Fabulous. Great. I want to talk about, though, how do you market these just strictly through book shows, or are you actually going to communities and neighborhoods and having the authors talk or display the books?
The authors, and that's, you know, based on how each author is set up. The more successful books have authors who are out there, you know, actively presenting them in schools, doing interviews, and this kind of thing.
Because libraries usually still have, like, reading corner time. I know most libraries do for children.
Well,
especially
one thing we found as we keep going in the business is that what a huge portion of the success of a book is based on the efforts of the author.
I think that's true in all publishing. I mean, you know, since I have been in the work I am, and also, you know, doing the radio show and working with many, many different authors, you know, everybody has the illusion that authors make a lot of money.
You're right.
You know, and as Mary Ellen has often said, yeah, 52 cents goes a long way. And it's true. I think people think, you know, with the exception of perhaps Harry Potter, really, into even if you make it on the best-selling New York Times best-selling book list, it takes a lot of selling books to make very much money, because really, truly, most publishers do not have a lot of money to send you out on the road and do tours. I think really authors make it. They make it themselves. They really love their works and put the effort out and really work with a publisher to really, you know, make it get out there more and get the exposure.
Exactly.
So, other than the website, can they also go to, are these available through Barnes & Noble and other places?
Well, Barnes & Noble and Borders have, they're available through there. Whether a book is in a store, that's a real challenge in our industry. That's, for example, last year, there were roughly 190,000 books published. And say a small store can have 5,000 to 10,000 titles, and then on up from there. But, and of course, you know, over the last 10 years, you can imagine the number of books published. And so, whether a store actually has a particular title is really problematic. But they can always be ordered through those, or just through our company, or that's the normal way that. We loved having the independent stores and the gift stores. We
that's one thing Mary Ellen and I have noticed is that when we first, 10 years ago when we first really met, and she had published her book was published shortly thereafter. We used to go to a lot of independent stores. We'd like throw the books in the back of the car and head out, you know, and really go from Seattle to Oregon and do the route. A lot of little bookstores, unfortunately, are kind of closing. I think a lot of big stores have kind of squished them out of the process, unfortunately.
Not kind of closing, actually closing.
I know. I really liken it to that movie, you know, the little bookstore around the corner. And it really is true that the big bookstores, you know, Borders and Barnes & Noble, certainly has had impact on almost all local economies. And Amazon, you know, boy, I mean, every time I talk to anybody about a book, it seems like they're ordering it from Amazon, which in a way is still keeping the book in circulation, but it's not so good for the wonderful little bookstores. So I really encourage my listening audience to support all those little bookstores that have really been there over the years, too.
Because they know their books so much better.
It's true, they do. And it's family, you know. They really are there through all the times and usually have wonderful promotions and things for kids, too. What is the responsibility of a publisher in regards to, you know, social and political issues? I think that's got to be a tough question.
Boy, this is really an interesting age for, you know, all people in the news media and publishing, I think. You know, if you look at, obviously, national news being taken over by right-leaning people. Fortunately, we've got some adult publishers who are, you know, got the courage to publish books by people like Richard Clark and these types of folks who've come up with speaking the truth. I'm, you know, we've got enough, like, for example, in my, you know, in my business, we don't do the children's publishing. We don't do anything political. But as a publisher, I'm very strongly aware of the pressures that get put upon editors and reporters from all angles. It's pretty amazing time.
I really noticed that of late myself. It really is hard to find good news. It's all serious. I mean, if, you know, my mother used to always say, don't talk about politics or religion.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all there is on the news. A religious issue caused a big political issue. And, you know, I was thinking that today when I was driving my car. It's like, what can you say? What could you be a news about if you took those two things out of the circuit, you know? I don't think the news would know what to do.
Well,
because we don't have a lot of happy
pretending to be news programs are actually just promoting some agenda.
Well, and they also sensationalize things. Instead of looking towards the answer, they look towards the problem and usually make it a little more frightening for the world. One of the other books that I really loved that you did was Cassandra's Angel.
Mm-hmm.
So could you talk a little about that?
Well, this is a story of a little girl it was brought to us by the author Gina Otto, who had more or less received it than that it came in a flowing manner to her. And it's a little girl who doesn't seem to do anything right. First, her mother says her room in the zoo, and she's messy, but she does not like that story. No, she does not. And then her goes next door to the play with the kids, and she's too different. And her teacher says she's incorrigible. The mayor has no time for her, and she goes to the top of the rock, and as she's about to go home, she turns around, and there's her angel, who lets her know that she's as bright as the skies, bright as star, and everyone's stories about her are just their own stories. Her conclusion is, I'm Cassandra, a bright light, and that was her very next thought. And no one could change that story. No, they could not.
I love that one because I could so relate to that one of being so different when I was a kid,
right,
talking to angels and seeing, you know, guides and things. And, you know, you really do feel like an odd person out. And I have to tell you, that's the very first book I ever saw published by you.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't wait to get it and just share it with a bunch of people because I said, it's me. They're writing about me. You know, and I think we've all read books where we see ourselves in them. And in yours in particular, often I see some aspect of me, which I love. And I think, you know, I don't care what age you are. These books are really, even though they're written for children, I got to tell you, I think the parents get more out of them.
Well, think of the questions that could
change.
Come up between a parent and a child over the book, All I See Is Part of Me. And where the child could say, Daddy, what does this mean? The parents got to go really deep.
They do. It's real. That one's almost, you know, a psychological book that you have to really go internal.
And yet we've had reactions to that book from children as young as 6 months old.
Oh, my God.
When we published that book, like I was telling you earlier, that was our first children's book. And a friend of mine, Sylvia Donjay from Seattle, brought 10 copies and gave one to a friend of hers. And, you know, we don't know who all gets our books.
Right.
But a year and a half later, we received a letter from the child's parents saying that they had gotten that book when their baby was 6 months old and read it to him that day. And that he had responded so much at 6 months to the book that they started reading it to him every day from then on. Included in their letter was the baby's funeral program.
Oh,
and
my God.
The beginning and the ending of the book was there, and it's, I am part of all I see, and all I see is part of me, and I can see in all of me that there can be no end.
Wow.
And then they had three pictures from the book in the program, and their letter said that our book had changed their experience of his short life and also his experience of a short life. So, it's hard to say what is the age limit on some of these books.
Well, you know, it's my belief that from the minute before we even get here, we're listening.
Definitely.
You
I love prenatal books.
So, I mean, not everybody will agree with me on that, but, you know, they've proven over scientific studies now that, you know, that you should read while you're pregnant and all those things, and I believe that. I believe while we're circling out there deciding if we're going to come to this dimension and have this life experience that we're listening. And so it's not surprising to me that kids are, I mean, kids now, I mean, my neighbor was telling me that their five-year-old went to kindergarten and on a computer, and I'm going, huh? Because I can barely do it myself.
Isn't it amazing?
You know, they're amazing, these kids. They are so brilliant that they get things so much faster than we. Sometimes I really feel like I'm a 286 and you know, they're the Pentiums in the world. And it's true because they're so bright. Now, not, you know, like Cassandra's Angel, you know, is a book that's really very spiritual and metaphysics. And how do other people, perhaps from other religions, react? Because you do have a few books that have, you were talking about one of them about God earlier.
Well, basically God's promise.
God's promise, yeah.
That's
going,
well, that's, if people don't believe in God, then they wouldn't like that book.
Mm-hmm.
But any religion would like it. Let me just give you one of the pages on that book.
I'd love it.
It's so beautiful. Basically, it's God's talking with little Angelina before she comes in. And here we go. When I'm on earth, how will I find you? She's asking him. I will be everywhere you look, in the eyes of others, the fragrance of flowers, the colors of the rainbow, the breeze upon your face, the warmth of the sun. Talk with me when you wake each morning and before you go to sleep at night. Tell me the wonders and joys of each day so we may treasure them together. Share with me your worries and fears and know that I will always be with you. And then one little other place, it's so sweet. Never forget that I'm with you on this journey. Through your eyes, I will see the first light of each new day. I will walk with you. I will stand tall with you.
Okay, I need that book for almost all my client base.
I know, it's so beautiful.
Because we forget.
Think of Carol Purnell's artwork with that.
You know, we forget. The minute we get here, we forget that we are never alone. You know, we get in that fog of confusion. And I really think, you know, parents forget. I think as we get older, we really forget that first day of kindergarten, or now it's preschool, you know, when you're going out into the world and it's not your little family world. And kids have to go to daycare in kindergarten or preschool early these days. And I still remember the first day that I went and left my mother for the, you know, more than 3 hours, you know. It was like dramatic.
Oh.
And, you know, I really think it with these kinds of books, you lose that fear because you know you have God or spirit or someone with you, your angel. And so it really does help take out the fear of things. Or the book that we just read about color, knowing that you can understand the different people before you get there. It takes a lot of fear out of the world, your books do, and that's important.
I appreciate that. We've got a book that a lot of people are reading to their babies before they're born, and it's brilliantly illustrated by a man from Seattle, David Danioff.
I want to say this: not all your artists or authors are from Seattle, but you are Seattle-based, and we appreciate that. We have some wonderful talent here.
Well, Gerald Purnell is, you know, illustrating God's Promise in Color 2 is from Philadelphia area.
Awesome.
But if I could give you a couple of lines from that book, you'll see how that book would be so perfect to read. It's called A Mother's Promise. When you were born, I promised to help you remember all you've forgotten. I promised the ocean. You'll hear the beating of its heart against the shores. I promised the forests. You'll share the whispers of their pines. I promised the desert. You'll feel its warm breath on your cheek. I promised the mountains. You'll sit on their broad shoulders and wonder. I promised the stars. You'll follow their pathways and hear their stories. I promise the world's sacred places I will teach you honor. I promise the world's creatures I will teach you respect. I promise the world's people I will teach you to love, just as I promised to always love you. That's about half of that book.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that a treasure?
It is a treasure. I love the way almost all your books teach love. They really come from the heart and soul of a being, in an expression of calm and, again, like I said, taking away fear. in a time, I think, when there is so much fear manifest because of the drug situation in the United States and probably in the world. And, you know, so many parents that have to work two jobs to maintain or a lifestyle in the ever-expanding expense of the world, you know, we are handing our kids over to daycares and to not necessarily always grandma and grandpa anymore, because often grandma and grandpa are still working.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not the extended family. It's true. Greeters at Walmart, it's true. Bless their hearts. But, you know, that sense of family, that sense of extendedness has really changed over the generations. And so these are wonderful books to add to daycares, too. And
a lot of daycares are smart enough to have found them in Montessori schools.
I have to tell you, I just read some Steiner books, Rudolf Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away how amazingly before his time he was.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Could not believe. And actually, I want to mention here, Rebecca May, a friend of mine, did a report on, she's a teacher, she's in studying for her master's, and she let me read her report, and I was just absolutely stunned because I had not read Steiner. And I started reading him, and then I thought, wow, what a great concept for school. So for kids that
Emanuel Swedenborg was another one so far ahead of his time.
Absolutely. Andrew Jackson also did Lyceums, which are schools for young kids for spiritual things. So it's been out there, but, you know, I think there's a renaissance of it, and I'm so glad there is. I wish I had gone to a Montessori school. I probably would have felt normal.
You know? Well, I don't think so.
Oh, you don't? Darn.
No.
John, I think you know me too well.
Better luck next time.
But when I read your books, I'm very happy, and I recommend them a lot to people who have these very developed kids who are very attached to colors and things. I do find, even though I think all kids are special, I'm not saying only in Go, Crystal, or Rainbow, but there are kids who are open and who need more, who hunger for a little bit different tweak our view of the world.
Well, deeper experience of life.
And your books really provide it. And for kids who are maybe not that innate aware, it awakens within them something to go in search of and not settle for, you know, black and white and gray areas, but to hunger for the more and to go after it and know they can achieve it, which is wonderful.
Well, I'm the author of the book that we've got for the fall, and that's really the full focus of that book. It's called Just Imagine.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I'm going to give you just a couple lines from that.
Great.
On our magic swing in this place of wonder, we dream our dreams as our imagination wander from one adventure to another. Aboard our supersonic jet, we dare to fly so high, we can even fly beyond the sky.
Wow.
We can even fly beyond the sky. So in the, you know, a little bit of a children's words, we're setting up an imagination that can soar into foreverness.
Well, you know, we are in a time where kids are wanting more and seeing beyond more. And I do think that even some of these books eventually could be made into little mini movies, mini series, I pray, because and they could expand them a little bit because, you know, children's what's available on TV for children is changing. You know, I can remember when Sesame Street started and it was such a big thing. It was like, wow, it blew everybody away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the kids are even moving on beyond that. I mean, I really think kids talk really early now, much earlier than I'm sure I did. And so they have a bigger need for this parent time. And, you know, I really want to encourage my listeners to know, whether you are a mom or a dad, a grandma, grandpa, aunt, I don't care who you are. My aunt calls me Auntie Woo Woo all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She's 23.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter who you are. Anybody can read to a child. Anybody can take the time. So don't think it's just for the parents. If you are the aunt and the uncle, you know, in many times now aunts and uncles are 13, 14.
Yeah.
You know, take that moment to read to that kid. It's treasure. What we take with us when we transcend this world is that heartfelt moment. Those times we have been in intimate personal contact with each other's soul through shared experience. And it's so important. And these books take you on journeys of the soul, truly. So any chance you get to experience these books with your children, with anyone, and I really want to encourage also senior citizens, don't think you get to hang up your gloves in the world here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your gift, your skill of communication is needed all around the world. We still have a literacy problem here in the United States, as well as other countries. So, you know, if you're interested, you see one of these books that speaks to your heart, get it and go to your nearest community center or go to your school, find out who needs some nurturing after school to set and read. You know, I'm dyslexic, and trust me, I must have done a billion summer schools trying to learn to read.
Whoa.
I just thought I was stupid. I really was in my 30s and went to college when I finally found out I was dyslexic. I wasted a lot of time hating about reading.
Wow.
And it was so sad for me because once I knew that it was really a legit thing, I couldn't get enough to read. I would struggle with reading because I wanted the knowledge, but I would get so frustrated because I couldn't spell. So there are tons of children like me, and there's very many different levels of dyslexia out there. So anybody can read to a child. It's a gift. So you publish approximately 3 a year.
It's varied from 4 down to 2.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just various times and based on what's happening with the books we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard for a publisher, a small publisher or a specialized publisher even, to make this keep growing. How can people help? Just by becoming aware of your books?
Well, they can, yes, by the more they let their schools know, their libraries know, about, and their churches know. We've got a whole lot of churches that buy our books regularly because they're based on values. It's just not a lot of them are just like, for example, one sweet story called One Smile. And in this story, a little girl is walking through the park with her mom to catch a bus. As the van's being repaired, and see the sad young guy moping on the park bench because he just lost his job and getting down and out. She just gives him such a radiant smile that he gets up and starts looking for a job. And then along the way, he sees the lady's retired change and gladly helps her out. And that lady then at lunch leaves a huge tip for the waitress who on the way home buys picnic stuff for her kids. And one boy says, listen about the family next door. They just moved to town. The families have such a great time on the picnic, that little girl calls her grandma and says, you know, grandma, we might like the city after all. We just made friends. So grandma shares the good news with the rest of her kids, sends them animal stickers. One boy gets his on the way to a doctor's appointment. Well, now he's sharing his, he sits down next to a little girl been crying all morning and with a cast in her arm and starts sharing his stickers with her. And well, they're giggling together, so her grateful dad gets her back home and can get back to his auto shop, and at the end of that day, here comes a young boy looking for a job, and it's the same boy from the beginning.
I love that. It's like pay it forward and things come full circle.
So the next day, his final job is fixing a van, and it turns out to be a van for a little girl and her mom.
I love that. Full circle.
Yeah,
you know,
circle.
It really is like a one, you know, at Christmas time, well, I play it all year round. I'm guilty. It's
mm-hmm.
A Wonderful Life. That's my favorite movie.
One Smile.
It is. And we don't know. And, you know, Mary Ellen, I know you know Mary Ellen Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Christ. You know, she really lives her life like that. And so I don't have this book. I'm going to have to get this book that you just described.
I'll send it to you.
What's the name of it again?
One Smile by Cindy McKinley, a wonderful teacher from Michigan, illustrated by Mary Greg Byrne from Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's a total treasure.
Because, you know, Mary Ellen and I are that way. We always think, you know, how can we change one life? We really think every day, you know, that we need 2 miracles before 11 o'clock every day. That's our goal. And we are so blessed to usually get that and more. And it's true. We just, you one kindness, it leads and it changes every aspect, every moment. And, you know, truly, one smile can make a difference. I met someone who was looking like they were having a bad day at the Cosmic Office, and just took a moment out of my life to say, "No, are you okay? You know, is there, you know, you want to talk? Is everything okay?" I didn't know the person, and it turned out I actually kept them from committing suicide. And so, you know, don't be afraid if you get that sensation, that feeling to say something, to just take time with someone, because you may be saving a life. You never know.
That's how God works in the world.
Thank you. It does. It is truly, you know, we are co-creators. We are part of God. And as soon as we remember that, life gets good. There's another book that you have, Your Father Forever, that I thought was illustrated amazing. And I'm, please know I'm not discounting the stories, but I'm a visual person. And I look at this and I just say, how did they get those colors that way?
Well, Michaela Brew is the illustrator, and she's now living in Seattle. Her husband has a, they're from Brazil, but her husband is a doctor, and he's in Seattle these days. And the boy in the picture, the older boy, is her nephew. And she just is a consummate artist.
I'm telling you, the eyes in this book are over the top. But what I love most is the feet, the picture of the feet.
Oh.
The toes. I love the toes. It's got adult's feet, or grown-up's feet, and little baby feet, and it's so beautiful. It just it warms your heart. It
well,
just
that's from,
does.
By Travis Griffith, all from Spokane, Washington. And the beginning of that one goes, "On the day you were born, I held you in my arms and knew I would love you forever. From that moment on, I promised to guide you as together we explore the wonders of vast world." And it ends, "I will be your daddy for as long as you want me to, but I'll be your father forever."
And the last page has a little hand wrapped around a finger of a grown-up's hand, and it's magnificent. I just tell you, it's like every book in is just so... so spiritual. It's just wonderful, wonderful.
Well, you asked earlier how we pick our authors, and essentially we were getting around 8 to 10 author submissions per day. And so out of 8 to 10 per day, we're picking 1 to 3 per year. So that's why we don't have any, what I would call, like, a, here's our book we just forced in because we had to cram another book in each. The selection is
very painstaking.
I would think
it would be very hard to pick.
It's a very painstaking process.
I'm glad I don't have that job.
It's very difficult. My mother, who's 89 years old, Ruth, she receives all of our manuscripts. And so every one of them, she then is the first one who receives them. And even at that age, she's a brilliant editor.
That's wonderful.
I think one of the nation's best editors. And she's never, she hasn't missed a step since I've seen the last 10, 15 years. My mom.
There you go.
Yeah.
And a mom who's read to her kids should know.
I know.
You know, it's fun, it's wonderful that it really is kind of a family business, too. And
well, my wife, Ariana, is a feng shui consultant formerly and an interior design specialist. So she is very active in selection of the artwork, selection of fonts, just using her artistic eye to, you know, and guidance of the artist and this kind of thing.
I do notice that the fonts in your book are very easy to read, easy on the eye for, say, an elderly person to read to a child, too. Bless your heart. Eyes do get weary after about 80 years. You said, though, something that intrigued me that I actually did not know, and I've known you a short time, a few years. But go back to the John Lennon thing. Tell me about that.
Well, basically, Jason Lean, in 1973, had started a painstaking process of bringing forth a book called The Death of the Prophet. And it was channeled through Cahill Gibran on the other side. And in that book, Gibran had, as you know, The Prophet was one of the most brilliant books ever published.
Yes.
He was working on The Garden of the Prophet when he died. Then that was strung together by his editors. And he had written a letter before he died saying that the third of his book, of his trilogy, the completion of the trilogy, would be called The Death of the Prophet. He gave one line, which was, "And they shall return unto the city of Orphalese, and they shall stone him unto death, and they shall call every stone a sacred name." And so basically it did, that's the way it happened. It came through Mr. Lean, and I suppose that he'd done such a good job receiving that that when John Lennon died, he started coming to Jason for about a year, telling about the events on the day of death, but then all of the healing temples that he was going through.
Now, John Lennon actually was very connected with Yogananda, was he not?
I don't think so.
Oh, I had read that somewhere. Oh,
Ram,
okay.
He was connected
so,
with Maharishi. Mahesh Yogi.
Oh, okay.
That's my understanding. But
okay, I knew he was connected to a yogi.
Yeah, it was Maharishi.
And somewhere I had read something about him having either connected or met Yogananda or something.
No, I think Yogananda had died by the time John started getting spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So are these books still available as well?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Definitely.
Wonderful. Because so these are actually basically channeled works.
Yeah, those two are channeled, and included in the Lennon book is 13, well, there are three of the 13 new songs that came through, and boy, the lyrics are what it tells you that it's John Lennon for me.
Right. I actually have to tell you, so many people I know really, a lot of John Lennon songs were very, very spiritual, you know. And so I don't think very many people know about this work. I'm going to have to get busy for you.
Jason Lean is the author.
Yeah,
so.
Because
great.
It really sounds like something that, especially if you're a John Lennon fan, you would want
to hear a couple of lines from this song. I could quickly give you one called Lost in the Promised Land.
Mm, I'd love it.
I've seen them standing like the prophets with their scriptures in their hands. I see them try to judge the righteous, be they beast or be they man. I see them take their small portion for the whole of God's great plan. But as long as they stand together, they're lost in the promised land. Lost in the holy land and blinded by the light. Yes, they're lost in holy land, and they wouldn't know the Lord if they met him here tonight. Now the earth was once a haven, some say it shall be again, that the angels will come from heaven and speak with the sons of man. I pray those dreams are true and that we'll stand hand in hand, for as long as we stand divided, we're lost in the promised land.
Wow, profound. Oh my goodness. So he speaks beyond the grave. I believe that. I believe that he was working on a lot of works that really, you know, he became very, very spiritual. Definitely in the later part of his life.
He's had more Jason. Also, that was Jason Lean who got that book. Then another lady named Linda Keen, K-E-E-N, from Southern Oregon, received another book from John Lennon. And he's very playful. He's probably come through more than almost any other, what you call, a celebrity spook.
thank goodness, there's a lot of great mediums out there that listen and do get channeled work, good channeled work. And I really want to say for my listening audience, too, that, you know, when we're talking about channeled work, know that a lot of the time when people get things from, quote-unquote, famous people, they're verifiable, that they will get part of, like, a lyrics or something that only a family member or people would know, you know, that is,
mm-hmm.
that's out there. So often when we're talking about this kind of thing, please note that you can, you know, often get double verification about things. Even if you're going to a channel for your own purpose, lots of times you'll get things that, you know, only the person would know, only the family would know, only the wife or, you know, someone, family member would know. So channeled works are very interesting works, and you have to read them with an open mind and feel what resonates with you. But it's very amazing that you're actually beginning was on channeled work.
Mm-hmm.
Again, drawn back to a connection with yogis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, that full circle thing that's going on.
That's true.
So, are you doing a children's book connected with a basis for the insight of things that are more Eastern philosophy?
Well, God's promise is really the essence of all the religions. It's,
how wonderful.
So to me, it's like, and all I see when you think of that, if we got a couple more minutes, I could give just a few little lines from that to
we
show
do.
People some of the power that you can find in the children's book. Would that workable?
Mm-hmm. Please.
It starts out, I am part of all I see, and all I see is part of me. I am my hands, I am my feet, I'm the puppy across the street. I am the moon, I am the stars, I'm even found in candy bars. I used to think that I was small, a little body, that was all. But then one day I asked the Son, "Who are you?" He means we are one. "But Mr. Son, how is this true? How could I be both me and you?" He smiled. "You might ask your sister Star. She too is part of who you are." And so I waited till the night when darkness let me see her light. "Sister Star, can it be that I am you and you are me?" She glowed, "You are larger than you know. You are every place there is to go. You have a body, this is true, but look at what's inside of you." I closed my eyes to see within. I saw a light that made me grin. It reminded me of Sister Star. She said that light is who you are. Your body is just a little part of the light that shines within your heart. That's about half the book.
Oh, my God.
Isn't
I love
a treasure?
It so much. I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is true, you know, that we are so much more than we let ourselves be, unfortunately.
And what's inside
I think
of you?
your books are opening up a world for not only the children and adults. It has been an incredible pleasure talking to you today and sharing the wonderful books that are out there for kids and for adults, and just really learning more about where you're going with your business. And I encourage everyone to look into this and, again, check out your website. If you'll tell them your website one more time before we go off air.
www.illumin.com.
Thank you so much, John.
Let me give the 800 number one
Absolutely.
More time if I can. It's 888-210-8216.
Thank you so much, John, for today and our talk. And I look forward to seeing the new books, and I'm going to order the John Lennon thing. I've got to know about that more. So thank you again, audience, for being with us and sharing an hour, I hope, that has been illuminating and teaching. And remember that you are part of everything and that you make a difference in the world. Remember to let your heart light shine and let it shine for your path and the path of others. And until we talk again, remember to stay wrapped in the wings of your angels. Bye.